This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane. China's controversial security pact with Solomon Islands has caused deep anxiety across diplomatic, intelligence and political circles, raising questions over what more could have been done to prevent it being signed. Now the ABC has learnt of an unfortunate set of events that saw one of Australia's key contacts with the Pacific nation unable to be in Honiara for the crucial months leading up to the agreement. Here's defence correspondent Andrew Green.
In the sparsely populated Solomon Islands, just 1,700 kilometres from the Queensland coast, Australia has an imposing diplomatic presence. A country with just 680,000 people hosts an Australian High Commission with dozens of permanently posted staff.
Hello, my name is Lachlan Strawn. I'm the Australian High Commissioner to the Solomon Islands. Everyone calls me Lockie.
Throughout most of the COVID pandemic, Australia's widely respected High Commissioner Lachlan Strawn remained in Solomon Islands, working closely with Prime Minister Manase Sogavare as the Pacific nation battled to keep COVID out.
We are working very closely with the government of Solomon Islands to be prepared for a possible outbreak of COVID. We're all in this together.
In early September, Dr. Strawn flew out of Honiara for his first trip back to Australia in more than a year. After completing 14 days of mandatory quarantine in Brisbane, the High Commissioner finally arrived back in Canberra in late September. The ABC has learnt that soon after getting home, the long-serving diplomat suffered a serious back injury, which kept him in Australia on strict medical advice. Then in November, civil unrest erupted in the Solomon's capital. As the Australian government scrambled to respond to an urgent request from the Sogavare government for law and order assistance, Deputy High Commissioner Sally-Anne Vincent remained in place.
We know that Solomon Islands plays a vital role in supporting our regional security.
A spokesperson for the Department of Foreign Affairs says Ms. Vincent is a seasoned and experienced diplomat and that she had full access to the Solomon Islands government, including the Prime Minister. But just 2 days before Christmas, the Chinese Foreign Minister delivered an unwelcome surprise to the Morrison government.
At the request of the Solomon Islands government, China will urgently send a batch of police anti-riot equipment and an ad hoc police advisory team to the Solomon Islands.
With Dr. Strawn remaining in Canberra, Chinese officials were busily ingratiating themselves with the Sogavare government, and Australia's 24 diplomats in Honiara were working furiously to understand what exactly this new policing agreement involved, some fearing a broader military deal was in the works. Finally, in early February, the High Commissioner was given the all clear to fly back to Honiara. Within weeks of his return, his colleagues' worst fears were confirmed. A wide-ranging security agreement between Beijing and Honiara was close to being finalised, and a draft was leaked to the media and defended by Prime Minister Sogavare.
We entered into an arrangement with China with our eyes wide open.
And it's not the only agreement Australia is watching closely. The ABC has learnt that in 2019, one of China's largest defence and aerospace companies, AVIC Commercial Aircraft, promised to upgrade almost three dozen airstrips in Solomon Islands if the nation purchased six aircraft from the state-owned giant. It's not clear if that plan will progress. As for the security pact, Australian diplomacy's most pressing task, how to unpick it.
That report from Andrew Green and Stephen Jedgetts. Ukraine's foreign minister says Russia hit the centre of Kyiv with cruise missiles at the same time the UN Secretary General was visiting the capital to meet with President Volodymyr Zelensky. The pair spoke about the growing humanitarian crisis at the steel plant Mariupol, which thought hundreds of fighters and civilians are holed up. The UN says it's doing all it can to make an evacuation possible. Europe correspondent Steve Kinnane reports.
After visiting Bucha, where he called for a thorough investigation into alleged war crimes in Ukraine, the UN Secretary General ventured to Kyiv to meet President Zelensky.
There's no problem. Nice to meet you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Hello.
President Zelensky said it was important that Mr. Guterres had witnessed the crimes committed against Ukrainians. and that the UN finds a way to facilitate the evacuation of civilians from the Azovstal plant in Mariupol. The most important thing is to see what the UN can do to relieve the Azovstal steel plant, to save people's lives. We've spent a lot of time discussing this issue, and I trust and believe, as do the many relatives of those people who are trapped in Azovstal, that the Secretary-General and we all will be able to have a successful result, to have those people return home alive. The UN Secretary-General says President Putin has agreed in principle to the involvement of the UN in the evacuation of civilians from the Azovstal plant, and that there are intense discussions going on right now to make that a reality.
Mariupol is a crisis within a crisis. Thousands of civilians need life-saving assistance. Many are elderly, in need of medical care, or have limited mobility. They need an escape route out of the apocalypse.
At the White House, President Biden announced that he is asking Congress to approve a further $33 billion US dollars in aid for Ukraine, $20 billion of it in military assistance.
We need this bill to support Ukraine in this fight for freedom, and our NATO allies, our EU partners, they're going to pay their fair share of the cost as well, but we have to do this. We have to do our part as well, leading the alliance. The cost of this fight is not cheap, but caving to aggression is going to be more costly if we allow it to happen.
The scale of funding being sought by the president is a sign that the U.S. believes this war is not going to end anytime soon. This is Steve Kinnane reporting for AM.
With a pre-election interest rate hike on the card, small business operators are starting to make plans about how they'll adjust if customers tighten their belts. The Reserve Bank could lift the official cash rate as soon as next week after inflation soared to 5.1%, a 20-year high. Gavin Coote reports.
With the price of food, housing and other essentials skyrocketing, Ari Markman worries about what it'll mean for customers at her Melbourne yoga studio.
And I think everybody's feeling the pinch. And what we're noticing now is you've got this inflationary pattern moving across, and it's definitely starting to impact on what people buy, how they buy, and whether they show up for classes.
While she's grateful to have loyal clients who'll stick with her, others are reining in their spending.
Certainly what I'm noticing in my business is people are buying passes that are shorter term. So you're not necessarily getting people buying annual passes, you're getting people buying much shorter passes. And it seems to suggest that there's an uncertainty about the future. It seems to suggest that people are trying to just keep things short term rather than looking longer term. And that's definitely a worry because it obviously also impacts your bottom line.
And she's already noticed other businesses making adjustments because of that.
One of the trends that's happening across the Melbourne yoga industry is studios are dropping the number of classes they offer. So that way you can reduce some of your outgoings in relation to wages and the like. But there's definitely lots of tinkering happening across the industry to try to manage outgoings while you're in this situation, whereas you don't want to create any more barriers to people coming in through the door.
The surging cost of living means the Reserve Bank is increasingly likely to lift official interest rates. As a tenant in a commercial building, Ari Markman is worried about what that might mean when she renegotiates her lease, if landlords are having to make higher repayments on their own loans.
Most are tenants and, you know, people had various things that they'd organised with their respective landlords through the course of the pandemic. But now we're in a situation where we're not necessarily seeing a huge increase in revenue, but there's no more negotiated outcomes with your landlords. There's no more government support, all of which we were grateful for. But we're now in a position where really constrained environment and outgoings are back to 100%. There's a reality that you have to be realistic about. Yeah, you can't imagine that we won't be the ones who in the end somehow sort of are the stopgap.
Bruce Stanford is one of those landlords. He owns commercial properties in the New South Wales town of Mudgee and relies on the income from his tenants for his retirement.
You can't keep putting the price up on your tenants or otherwise they've got to run a business as well, and so you've just got to absorb it and hope you can ride through it all right.
And even if he did want to pass on the cost of an interest rate rise, Bruce Stanford couldn't because his tenants are on long-term leases.
I've no idea how high the interest rates are going to get. That's a bit of an unknown question, I think, but I can't imagine them ever being back to the levels of the late 80s and 90s, but it'll obviously be a different time because we haven't seen this inflation for a long time, but everything seems to be getting dearer and dearer. We've sort of locked our rent in for a fairly long time, even though you're covered by CPI anyway.
Commercial landlord Bruce Stanford ending Gavin Coote's report. Food insecurity was already a serious problem in Australia, with an estimated 1 in 6 Australians having experienced not having enough to eat. Now, food banks and services say the rising cost of living is pushing more people to seek help. For some of those, controlling the cost of living will be the key to securing their vote on election day. Social affairs correspondent Norman Hermont reports.
Do you want?
Yeah.
There you are. Get another bag for you.
After her weekly complimentary lunch at this community centre in Western Sydney, Annette Formosa is taking food home. If she didn't...
We'll starve. There'll be no food. I'm so appreciative of everything that... the food that I get.
For them, we wouldn't have had.
Annette and her 14-year-old daughter rely on food assistance to make it through the week. Her budget from Centrelink has been stretched before, but never like this.
Before, you can buy the 2-minute steaks. It used to be $5 a tray, 10. Now it's $10. Sometimes when you've got $50 to do the week's shopping, $10, you just can't do it.
Catherine Hammond from Dundas Area Neighbourhood Centre in Tilopia says food hampers have become crucial to the help they provide.
We're just finding it's an essential part of our service now. With all the rising costs of living, so many people just need that little bit of extra help to get through the weeks.
The cost of living has emerged as a key issue in this election, and there's a reason. The annual inflation rate is now 5.1%, the highest in 2 decades. Wages rose just 2.3% last year. Christina Pollard from Curtin University says food is often the first thing to go when people start falling behind.
When costs of living prices go up, food is the one commodity that you can spend less on. People have to pay their rent. They have to get to work. There's these expenses that are fixed.
What fresh stuff are we giving out today?
At Banksia Gardens Community Services in Melbourne's Broadmeadows suburb, they provide 300 bags of food a week. Gina Dougal is the CEO.
We're certainly noticing people that are trying to get help where they haven't had to before.
Here's your bag here. Thank you, brother.
One of those who's turned to this service recently is Ahmad Abulod, who struggled to find work after his car broke down.
After Corona, everything happened now.
For Ahmad, cost of living is the election issue. The leader with the best plan to control costs will win his vote.
If he helped me, I'll help him. If he didn't help me for living, for food, why election for him?
Back in Sydney, Annette Formosa has also heard talk on the campaign trail about the cost of living. She's not impressed.
They have no idea. They talk the talk, but they don't know what it's like. If only they could come and live how, like spend a day how we live. They couldn't.
Western Sydney resident Annette Formosa ending that report by Norman Hermont. In isolated towns across the country, people are waiting weeks for a simple checkup with the local GP, if they're lucky to have a doctor in town at all. Voters constantly nominate healthcare as an important issue for them, but doctors say the major parties don't have any decent policies to fix staff shortages in regional Australia. John Daly reports.
In the Meander Valley in northern Tasmania, Ashley, as she wants to be known, has lost faith in her local health services. Her husband struggled with his mental health, and last year she tried to get him to see the local GP. He went on a 3-week waiting list and took his own life before his appointment came around.
It was quite sudden, and we thought, oh, you know, we'll get him a doctor's appointment. And yeah, they were weeks away. Not that I thought he was ever going to take his life, but yeah, the very next day. So I was right. He did need help, but yeah, we didn't think it was going to come to that. Yeah, I remember thinking at the time, wow, you've got to wait 3 weeks to get into the doctor.
In South Australia's mid-north, the rural community of Peterborough has no GP at all. It's a big problem for the town's ageing population, who either have to travel or wait to see whatever locum doctor shows up. Peterborough Mayor Ruth Whittle says locals are fed up.
They're so frustrated and so angry and so sick and tired of being fobbed off with, oh, we're doing something. Well, if somebody's doing it, what are they doing and when are they going to do it? We're sick of it, all of us.
This is a nationwide problem. And the president of the Rural Doctors Association, Dr. Megan Bellow, says the pandemic's only made it worse.
People are waiting up to 4 to 6 weeks to get a regular appointment. I know of patients that have waited a week to see their regular GP for an acute problem that they should have fronted up to the hospital within the 48-hour, 72-hour mark when they were sick, and they have paid a serious consequence in their health for waiting that long.
Dr. Bellow believes the major parties have largely ignored the issue of rural health in this campaign. A spokesperson for the Minister for Regional Health, Dr. David Gillespie, said he wasn't available for comment. In last month's budget, the Coalition announced $152 million to boost rural health and medical training. Dr. Bellow says more students won't be enough, and she wants funding and placements doubled for rural programs for junior graduate doctors. Labor has already promised to expand priority areas where overseas doctors can work, to include not just rural communities, but also metro and regional centres. Dr. Bellow isn't a fan of that policy.
We'll actually see a direct drain from these doctors from rural to metro, and there'll be nothing left for rural. What we actually need are the actual long-term solutions and the actual long-term commitment to certain programs that we know will work.
A spokesperson for Labor says it'll take action to increase the number of doctors in communities desperate for more GPs, and the party will have more to say during the campaign.
John Daly reporting, and if you or anyone you know need help, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. Since Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine, at least 300,000 Russians have left their own country. Many are angry about the war, worried about conscription or the fallout from all the economic sanctions. And they've got limited places to go to, with many countries stopping direct flights or restricting visas. But South Asian countries are welcoming Russians and thousands are settling in Sri Lanka. South Asia correspondent Avani Dias reports.
Sri Lanka.
It's a strong contrast to the war raging in Ukraine. But Instagram is full of videos by Russians travelling to the island nation of Sri Lanka, one of a handful of countries they can still go to.
A lot of people, young people, strong and creative, they are moving from Russia. They don't want to live in this country anymore.
After Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Polina and her husband Dmitry frantically started searching for flights out of Moscow. The only country they could get tickets to was Sri Lanka.
It was really a panic. When the plane was flying, it was the night flight, I opened the map, and I was waiting when the plane crossed the border of Russia, and then I slept.
The couple now live with a group of other Russians who've left the country in rented villas on the south coast of Sri Lanka. At least 300,000 Russians have left since the war began. Most are young professionals against the Ukraine invasion, worried about conscription or about job prospects in a sanctioned country. Polina was a filmmaker in Moscow.
The film market were rising very, very high. We started to work with Netflix. And now Netflix decided to not to work with Russia anymore.
Oleg Yakovlev was an anti-Putin activist in Russia. He'd never even been to Asia, but escaped to Sri Lanka.
At the beginning of the war, I understand that it's very dangerous to stay in Russia because all my life, for 20 years, I was in opposite to Russian political regime. And this is why I decided to move away as fast as I can.
But Russians moving overseas can't escape the impacts of sanctions. MasterCard and Visa have blocked them from withdrawing money. Polina Bykovskaya was on holiday in Sri Lanka when the invasion started and decided she didn't want to go back home.
You know, suddenly the life become very complicated. Like, I don't have my Apple Music anymore. I don't have my Google documents anymore.
South Asian countries like Sri Lanka and India have refused to impose sanctions on Russia because of their trade and military ties. Vladimir Putin has called Russians leaving their country scum and traitors. But citizens like Polina say even living in Sri Lanka, which is grappling with an economic crisis, is better than what's at home.
Now I'm not going to come back to Russia because I don't want to mess with the war. I don't get used to it.
This is Avani Dias in Marissa reporting for AM.
And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm
I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Russia's begun its final onslaught at the vitally important Ukrainian port city of Mariupol, which has seen some of the most intense fighting since the war began. Today, Ukrainian MP Oleksandr Mereshko on what could be a decisive turning point in the war and how, incredibly, in the capital Kyiv, life's returning to normal. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.